Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, July 10th, 2015. It's just a couple minutes before 3 UTC as we're starting to record this. I'm Sam Minter yet again, and Yvonne Bo is back with us today. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, everybody.
So, our real show, I always call it our real show, but our whole show.
Well, yeah, we don't do fake shows.
Yeah, we don't.
Well, let's see, your show, which you did on your own, by the way.
Yes, yes.
I guess first of all, you didn't do it in one continuous moment.
No.
Okay, so that's one thing.
I did it over the course of an entire day, essentially.
So the second thing is, man, you could really talk a lot on your own.
It was
almost 2 hours.
It was, yes.
You were by yourself.
Yeah. You know, back in the day, right around the end of my college career, right after I finished college, I interned and then I worked part-time at a talk radio station in Pittsburgh. And one of the things I did was I was the producer for the talk radio hosts. So I was the one who would like take the calls, put them up on the little screen, and play the commercials in between and all this kind of stuff. And I always wondered at the time, when they've got lots of callers, I understand how they can do this. They're having a conversation, but how do they do it when they have no callers?
Right.
And they just have to talk. How can you possibly do that? And then
apparently you've got no problem with this.
Yeah. I mean, I have now learned that if I need to, not even if I need to, you just stick a microphone in front of me and I talk for 2 hours straight.
Apparently, yes. And, Sam has some very interesting Twitter followers.
I don't believe... Well, you can tell your story, but I don't believe they actually follow me. They just...
This person does not follow you?
No, I don't think so. So
they favorited something that you posted.
Yvonne... We'll talk about Puerto Rico in a minute. I was going to say our real plan. We're going to talk about Puerto Rico. We're going to talk about Greece. We're going to talk about China.
Real plan, not the fake plan.
Yeah, we're going to talk about election 2016. We're going to talk about all the computer glitches at the NYSE and United and the hacking case on OPM. And we're going to talk about all that. But anyway, Yvonne had posted an article about Puerto Rico, which we'll probably talk about in a little bit. And of course, I read it and then tweeted that I had read it. And then somebody favorited that on Twitter. And as far as I know, they do not follow me. No. And I do not follow them.
It doesn't seem like they follow you. No. Okay.
No. So, but I saw them and, I saw the person favorited and I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is someone Yvonne knows. And so I clicked on their profile. Which, by the way, usually when people favorite my stuff, I don't usually click on their profiles unless I have some reason to. Like, I read their little summary, and if it's interesting, man, whatever. But I was like, oh, maybe this is somebody Yvonne knows. Who is this? I clicked through, and Yvonne, what did I get? And I was at work, by the way. I was at work.
It's like a storm of porn, basically. I don't know. All her posts are just, pictures of asses, bare asses, tits.
Anyway, this is actually, by the way, probably not a real human being. Advertisements. Like if you click through, they get paid to post these things and favorite random things, follow random people in the hopes that some of them will click through and then say, ooh, and click through to that. And Twitter is full of these things. And this is why I said most of the time I don't like if I get a random notice that somebody followed me or someone favorited something or whatever, unless their profile says something that, seems relevant to the thing I posted or whatever, I usually don't click through and follow these things. I certainly don't follow back or anything like that because a lot of them, are just these stupid bots or people who follow then unfollow or not even bots. The other thing that people do as a standard strategy to get their own followers is they go out and
it's just
follow a bunch of people.
But, right. that favorite a whole bunch of crap in order to get
that some algorithm or other tells them that this person might be interested in your stuff, so go favorite them, go follow them, whatever, and hopefully they'll follow back. And you know that whatever, you know, like the you know I sort of figure the way that I choose new people to follow on Twitter is if I see people I'm already following say things about them, post positive things, comment about them, whatever, that's how I find new followers. I don't find new followers based on who is following me or on, you know, who is favoriting stuff. I'll pay a little bit more attention to a retweet and see who that is that's retweeting me sometimes. And of course, if they're actually interacting with me, if they like have a conversation with me, that's a whole other story. But yeah, whatever. Anyway, this is part of what people talk. Twitter is hard to get into for new people.
Yes.
You know, because you have to really carefully curate your list of followers and know what to pay attention to and what to not pay attention to. And over time,
that's why it's becomes. But the reason when you curate the list, that's why it becomes useful. But anyway, now we've gone on a different tangent about Twitter and usefulness and stuff.
Yeah, like where you just really wanted to mention that.
Anyway, so I just wanted to mention that apparently, either Sam has a very hot woman following him, or it was just a bot, which is just a bot. So I was gone. Yeah, so I guess I didn't tell you that's what I was doing in California, that I was racing cars.
Yes, Yvonne was racing cars. So go ahead and take a couple minutes and talk about racing cars, and we'll get on to the real topics in a few minutes.
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's not that much to say. I mean, I have a couple of friends of mine that own a race car. I did this last year. I went to Virginia last year, and this time, there's a very famous raceway. I don't know if a lot of people have heard of it. Maybe, if you know about racing Laguna Seca, which is out in Monterey, California. It's like about a couple of hours south of San Francisco. It's very close to Silicon Valley. I have to drive to Silicon Valley to get there, actually. And my friends actually, they trucked the car from New Jersey all the way out there. They actually they trucked two cars. Some people that they knew, they were also wanted to race the car there, and they had a trailer and they're going to truck it. So they took advantage and they were going to drive. Those guys. Three guys did a relay drive from New Jersey to California to truck this thing over and then to take it back. As a matter of fact, they only left like yesterday to start bringing the car back, actually.
Yeah. So how did you do?
We did all right. I mean, look.
Was this another one of those 24-hour races?
No, we did only like it was 3 days of racing, six hours, 7 hours that we did. Now it's an endurance race, but it's a tag team, but we only do 2 hours each, 2 hours a day. We came in around 20th out of 52. Honestly, we have one problem. Our car, for whatever reason, now they changed the rules of the track, and they nailed us with a 4-lap penalty. All right, so we're starting the damn race 4 laps behind everybody
because you were cheating. Honestly,
no, they changed the rule where the vehicle that we bought now they deem to be this series is made to be as the cars to be as affordable as possible. So the car needs to be worth like $500 or less used when you buy it. Okay, all right, the base car, but then you turn it into a race car afterwards anyway.
Wait, $500 or less to start with?
Yes, correct. You need
that's
to be
a cheap car.
Yes, it is. Okay, that's why they call it the car. The series is called Chump Car. All right, for chumps. Okay, all right, because none of us are professionals. We're just doing this for fun. And somehow they deemed that the BMW that we bought, even though it did cost $500, okay, all right, was too modern. Okay, I think it's a whole load of shit. There was another BMW that was right beside ours. And the car was faster than ours, and somehow we get a fucking 4-lap penalty. I don't get it. So I don't know. So anyway, that's really what caused us for the most part. We probably could have been closer to like in the top 10. I'm 44 years old. I'm older than most of the guys there. I don't race as much as a whole bunch of the guys over there. I was slower. you know, let's not get around this. I mean, I was like a few sec. I was definitely a few seconds off the other people. However, like the one thing that I guess that I add to the to it is that I may be slower, but I am very consistent. I don't screw up too much on the track. So, I mean, you go off the track and you lose 5 minutes. So maybe I'm a couple of seconds off on every lap. But if I don't screw up that much, then I kind of make up for it. If you know what I'm saying. So it's on an endurance race, that's important. So anyway, but I had a lot. I mean, I love this stuff. Sam knows that anything mechanical, really, you know, with a wheel and an engine, I always like. So I had a lot of fun, you know.
And you didn't crash.
And I didn't crash. Now, I did go off the tracks quite spectacularly a couple of times, but didn't, I got bumped, okay, right from behind once, and they actually gave the guy a black flag for hitting me. But it was not very hard. I did go off the track quite spectacularly a couple of times, but I did not hit the wall or hit anything. I just wound up with sand in my mouth and just everything was clear, and I got back on the track and that's it.
I don't suppose there's video of this.
No, there's no video of me going off the track. Man. Actually, I had a GoPro. Here's the thing. I was trying to do this. I had a GoPro in there, and the way that I attached the damn GoPro, it came loose.
Mm.
So I couldn't. I couldn't.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had a stupid little update for the beginning of the show, but we're already over 10 minutes for this segment. So I'll save that for the lightning round. We'll take a break and we'll start with all of the countries with deep financial issues. Well, countries and Puerto Rico.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes. Puerto Rico is not a country at the moment. Not a state, not a country.
Not a state. We're not a country.
You're pretty much nothing.
Basically, yes. Yeah. Well, we're a territory. Let's be clear.
We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about China, Greece, Puerto Rico, and any other random countries Yvonne wants to throw into the mix. Back after this.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet? Well then, tell us all about it. Right now there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show. Because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, Yvonne, we're back. We've got, like, all kinds of crazy financial crisis things going on all over the world. We've talked about Greece in the past, and, when we talked about it months ago and years ago, you're always like, nothing's going to happen there. They'll always make a deal. And then last time we talked, 2 weeks ago, you were like, I have no idea what's going on anymore. Everybody's gone crazy. Let's start with Greece. Where are we now?
Here's the thing that's happened with Greece. Number one, the Greeks voted this government, which basically was like completely in austerity. None of these parties had actually won anywhere else. But Greece's situation was always worse than any of the other countries in Europe. Okay, whether it's Italy, Portugal, Spain, their situation was just far worse. Okay, so these guys get voted in, and for the first few months, it'd been playing to usual course, right? They kept saying they kept pounding the table and saying we're not doing anything, blah blah blah, and then they kept going to the table and they basically kept making concessions. Then it came like about 2 weeks ago that something completely unexpected happened. Okay, great. The prime minister went and basically walked away from the negotiating table and said, you know what? I'm going to put this to a vote. And you know what? Let's see what the people say. And so the last demands that the EU, which be the EU, by the way, said when they walked away, said, screw you, we're not doing anything. I don't care if they pass a vote. We're taking the offer off the table. Banks closed in Greece like the following Monday because they ran out of money because, like I said before, they were like really depending right now. There's people withdrawing money. They were so panicked withdrawing money. They were really depending on just the European Central Bank giving them cash. And they closed the spigots. They said, you know what? We're not giving them any more money. Fuck you. Whatever. We don't know if you're going to stay in the euro. They went to a vote, and the Greeks voted basically to say to Europe, we don't care. We don't want to pay the debt. Screw it. I don't care. So we got that vote, and they voted against the austerity. And you know, to a certain extent, can I be honest? I think they're right. The Greeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, and by the way, that from what I understood, the where the EU versus Greece were not, prior to the vote here, were not austerity or no austerity. They actually agreed they on had, the amount of the austerity exactly, and were disagreeing on how to distribute it and what programs would be affected.
Correct. Exactly. But I think that the voters basically said, screw you. Screw the deal. We don't want it.
Yeah.
And here's a problem. And here's a reason why the Greeks are right to a certain extent. You know, in a bankruptcy, when a company goes into bankruptcy, you get a haircut on your debt. Mm. Okay? All the Greeks are getting is they're not getting any haircut on the debt. They're getting loans to exchange other loans. Okay? All right? And then extending payment terms, so you still have to pay off everything, even though we know they're in hock to the eyeballs.
Right.
And that debt's like almost impossible to service. So why the hell would they just agree to that?
Yeah,
what's the point?
They're
bankrupt.
Right. Well, and there are a couple things here that, the more I've read about this, the more I've been thinking that, you know, who's right or wrong? Okay, different question. But fundamentally, I think the Europeans are making a huge mistake with how they're handling this. I think because they're deciding to be heavy-handed about it, because they're...
But let's be clear, it's not just the Europeans.
Okay.
Look, this has been the way that sovereign debt negotiations have been handled with any country that has been in difficulty paying their debts.
Well, and there's been lots of criticism of that worldwide as
exactly
well.
Exactly right.
In terms of how that's been
they
handling.
They keep saying that you know, austerity and like just renegotiating the debt and just giving new loans, just rolling it over and rolling it over is just bullshit. Okay.
Because
now the first country that did like about 14 years ago and finally said fuck you to that was Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
Argentina did that and they did get a haircut and a whole bunch of the debt. Now what happened is that even though they got the haircut of debt, the problem which for a certain time worked and it was fine, the problem is that their government is so incompetent that they got into hock even worse. They fucked up their economy so bad. Okay, and they mismanaged everything so poorly that they're even in 10 times worse shape even though they cut their debt. So they took something that was like they got a golden opportunity to be able to turn themselves around and basically just squandered it massively.
Right.
You know,
A couple other things here. One, I've been reading that you know most of this debt a few years ago was owed directly to banks, and
right.
then the European governments and central banks sort of took over those loans to bail out the banks. And,
right.
And so now the loans are government to government. But it seems like you know, at a very early stage, I mean, you know, look, to me, like when you look at these debt situations, it seems like you're just stepping back. Very basic. I loan you money. If I turn out to not be able to pay.
Right.
It seems like there are two consequences that should come out of that. Number one is I lose the money I loaned to you because I made a bad loan.
Or a part of it, at least,
Or at least part of it. Or,
yeah.
And number two, I don't loan to you anymore.
Right.
But,
yes.
Know, it seems
but
like...
But it's not what we're doing.
It's not what we're doing because then both parties suffer consequences. Yes, you got your free money, but you're never going to get any more money out of me. On the one hand, get, for the
or
data,
get, you may get less, or you may get less with more onerous terms.
Right, right. In any case, the consequences for the person who couldn't pay their loan are in the future they're going to have a harder time getting loans.
Correct.
Or having worse terms.
Which, by the way, is what happened to Argentina.
Right. Now, on the other hand, the person who loaned should just be, you know, should have to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, I'm taking a bath. I gotta take.
You either lose all the money or part of the money or whatever. You gave the money to somebody who was unable to pay. That sucks to be you. You made a bad call, and next time maybe you'll be more careful.
But that's what investments are. I mean, you know, they're not guarantees.
But it seems like what's actually been happening is when private entities like banks get into that kind of situation, you've got like these transnational entities who are like, well, we can't let the banks get in trouble. We can't let the banks lose that kind of money because it could have all kinds of ramifications. And so they swoop in and save them. So the results for the banks are that they've got all the upside of potentially getting paid from these bad loans and very little of the downside. And so they're not incentivized to actually be more careful in the future. And so the cycle continues. And then meanwhile, now you've got like, you know, the national government's taking over this debt, which means now if
you owe Germany money.
Well, now you owe Germany. But what that means is if anybody loses on this deal, it ends up being the German taxpayers who pay for it.
Correct. Yes.
And of course, if the Greeks aren't getting the loans they're getting, then the Greeks pay for it too, the individuals in Greece. And correct. So the people actually giving and receiving these loans end up not being the ones screwed. And so it seems like the whole way that this is being handled is completely messing up the incentives for anybody to do better in the future.
Yep. Well... Yeah, and so, look, I heard that they're going back to the table to negotiate some other stuff. But the bottom line is, Greek banks still haven't reopened, as far as I know.
Right,
it's been almost 2 weeks.
You can still get $60 a day.
Yeah,
or something.
$60 a day or some shit like that. And I think you can do internal transactions like checks and stuff and whatever,
right,
for payments in the country. You just can't do foreign transfers. But
okay, we got two more places to talk about yet.
Well,
so wrap
so
up.
Right now, I know that the Greeks are going back to the table and they're offer. They were putting an offer on the table with certain changes. It was substantially different, than before. And we'll see. But I think honestly, if I were the Greeks right now, fuck it, take the hard line. Screw it. What the hell? The banks are closed already. You're already taking the hit. You know, if you're already in, you know, in for an inch, in for a foot. You know what I'm saying? Fuck it. What the hell, right?
And see, here, after the election, everybody was like, okay, that's it. They're out of the euro. But now, you know, they're trying to salvage a deal again. But if they do leave, or even if they stay in, but you've sort of really damaged relations here.
Yeah.
This is where I'm talking about the way that this is being handled by Germany, France, etc. I think they are, in the long term, they are screwing themselves, I think, by not being more generous to Greece. And I understand why they're sort of fed up with continuing having to pay for Greece. But, I mean, come on. We pay for Louisiana. And the whole purpose of the euro was sort of a backdoor towards increased continental integration over time,
right. And this
increased
is part,
political
and that,
organization.
And this is part of that shit. But you let Greece in. This is what the shit that you should have expected by letting in. That's like,
the people who organized this, they expected there to be financial crises like this, but they expected them to serve as drivers for greater political integration.
And so, it's not. What it is it's toward the total opposite.
Right. It's tearing them apart. Because
right.
the way that you would get increased political integration over this is the way that you would solve this problem is that, you know, Germany or the countries with money would say, you know, okay, you're part of Europe and you're in trouble now, and so we realize we have to help you, so we're going to subsidize you, and in return we're going to, do something to sort of increase international ties between the countries or something like that, or strengthen the Central European government or something. But that's not what's happening at all. What's happening is you're increasing divisions within the European Union, because even if you get past this immediate crisis with Greece still in the euro, the Greeks are not going to be very fond of the Germans for a long time to come.
Okay,
and by the vice versa.
Somebody, in a friend of mine who usually doesn't post stuff that's all that interesting, but just posted something super interesting. Okay, they paid at a hotel in Greece with a credit card.
Yeah, and it showed up in
as drachma.
Yeah, I saw that earlier too, and I'm not entirely convinced.
I know why they put that. Maybe it's not that. Look, it's a contingency. Okay, I think because they want to know the transactions from Greece. Okay, so it's funny that a day after it happened that they changed it back. But anyway, I think that obviously they're trying to segregate those transactions to see what the hell happens, okay, with the payments. I think that's obviously what they're doing. I think that may be why they tagged it that way. Well, okay, so that's Greece.
Let's move on. Puerto Rico, because, if we were going to do a 15 segment on three countries, we would have taken 5 minutes each. We've done 12 minutes on Greece. So jump right in, Puerto Rico. Let's see what we can do.
Well, look, the Puerto Rico situation is significantly different for one damn reason. For one reason. Look, I did a very lengthy post on the reasons why Puerto Rico is where it is. Okay, all right.
For those of you who follow Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook, there's a link there. If you don't follow us on Facebook, hey, maybe you should, but you can find us on Facebook anyway. Find the link, read Yvonne's post.
And it's on my Twitter feed, and it's on Sam's Twitter as well. He posted he was reading it as well. Look, so you can go into those reasons, but you know, to get more detail. But the biggest difference in the situation that they have with Puerto Rico right now is everybody keeps talking. Some people saying that the Puerto Rican government is trying to go to Congress to ask for a bailout, and that's not really what they're asking for. And I get really pissed off when they say there's a bailout. What they're trying to get is equal treatment under the law, because the current bankruptcy law that exists, okay, all right, for governments, Chapter 9, specifically excludes Puerto Rico. Okay,
right. If this was Louisiana or Kentucky or California or whatever, there's a very specific set of procedures they can follow, which several states have taken advantage of in the past.
Yeah, the state itself, a state can't do it, but municipalities and public corporations can.
Oh, okay, so right? States right? can't.
Yeah, so as okay. a state, you can't file for bankruptcy. However, okay. Cities and towns, and there's been Detroit, for example, went into bankruptcy using Chapter 9. Stockton, California went into bankruptcy using Chapter 9. There's parts of Louisiana. There has been like public corporations like the city of Harrisburg. They had a public utility. They took advantage of Chapter 9. So it's been used all the time. However, for whatever the hell damn reason, Puerto Rico is legally excluded from following that. And the problem is
hold on, pause just a second, because if there was going to be any parallelism, wouldn't you expect it to be with the states, which you said could not do this?
What do you mean parallel? No,
if anything, shouldn't Puerto Rico have the same privileges as a state as opposed to the same privileges as a city?
Well, no. But the thing is, the Puerto Rico government has two main obligations. More than half the debt is held by the towns and cities of Puerto Rico and by public corporations of Puerto Rico. Okay. The power authority, the water authority.
So it's not actually the territory of Puerto Rico that owes most of this money.
A lot more than half of the money is owned by the municipalities or by public corporations.
Okay. Gotcha. Right? Okay. Continue.
So that's why, because what I think, okay, and what a number of people think, say, listen, the debt that Puerto Rico has, central government debt, is only 60% of GDP. That is probably manageable. We can figure something out. The problem is that a couple of debt that was outside the general
operation. We lost you for a second there, by the way. So repeat that last sentence.
That they took on a lot of debt that was outside debt, you know, from general obligations by the government. Okay, it was public corporations. It was the power authority. Okay, they're bankrupt. Okay, they're just completely bankrupt in all of these. So the fact that they can't file, you know, the Puerto Rico Power Authority and all of these cannot file for bankruptcy and do an orderly liquidation because the company is bankrupt and there is no method for liquidation. Okay, all right, and they need to liquidate the damn thing. And so is the water company. It's also bankrupt. It needs to be liquidated. But there's no mechanism for it. There's none. No legal mechanism. Puerto Rico House and Senate passed a bill to try to basically call the Puerto Rican bankruptcy laws what they called. They challenged it. It was challenged in the courts. It's in the federal courts right now, and federal courts struck it down as unconstitutional. The main reason it's unconstitutional because it goes against federal law. Bottom line, simple. There's federal law that exists on it, and the federal law states that you can't do what it says there. Period. Done. So it's struck down. There's no way it's going to pass. The only way to fix the problem is for Congress to go and fucking say, hey, you know what? Shit, we screwed up. We shouldn't have excluded Puerto Rico from this fucking law. Okay? It's not fair. We need to give them the same treatment as other jurisdictions. Period. That's it. And it's not a fucking bailout. It's just equal treatment under the law. So there's been a lot of debate about it. The Obama administration said they back doing this right now. Now they got to get Congress. There's a whole bunch of Republicans calling it a fucking bailout. The Republicans can go fuck themselves. They're wrong. It's not a fucking bailout. We just need to get equal treatment under the law. I mean, that's the key thing right now. And so that's why I consider it's just a lot different than from Greece. I mean, we just don't have any – I mean, Puerto Rico's just kind of in a situation where, you know, they don't have any way of dealing with this right now.
So given the situation in Congress, and you said Republicans are generally against this?
Yes.
So yeah, it's going to be hard to get anything done in Congress. So what happens if nothing happens?
There's been a lot of push. There's been a lot. If it doesn't happen, I don't know.
I mean, because you can do one of these other. You could do this thing with the Democrats plus a few Republicans, like we've done a few other things.
Yes, they're trying. That's what they're trying. We could have a very disorderly default because it's just not enough money to pay for these bills, and it's just going to be a legal mess from there. You know. That's one thing happened. Second thing that's an issue right now, which you're trying to get through court, is the whole oh my God, what the hell's the word in English? The law that prohibits foreign carriers from flying domestic passengers, for example.
Okay.
They use it for shipping as well.
Don't worry. Get the idea.
So basically, okay, there are laws that regulate, for example, a foreign ship cannot carry cargo between Puerto Rico and the United States mainland. Like, it can't carry cargo actually between Hawaii and the U.S. mainland either. Now, the impact of that, I know Hawaii, Alaska, and Puerto Rico have been seriously against it because it really raises the price of shipping costs. Because the law specifies that the ships that carry cargo Puerto Rico and say Hawaii, etc., have to be built in the U.S. They have to have U.S. crews. They have to have they have to be flagged in the U.S. That makes it that we have some of the most expensive shipping anywhere, okay, internally. And it raises the cost of living for everybody on the island to do that. And, you know, and it makes business uncompetitive. And that's also something that's in Congress, but there's a very powerful lobby from the shipping companies, obviously, that has been, you know, blocking that change at every turn. So that's another issue right now that also is in Congress and that they haven't moved on. I don't know. I the other issues are a lot of really domestic issues. Puerto Rico's government has been fucked stupid for very, very long. They have no strategy. They have no thinking. They're all brain dead. You know, you've got things that Washington has done, but the reality is that almost all the pain in Puerto Rico, 80 to 90% has been absolutely self-inflicted. It is what it is. Did it to ourselves, and I think I was talking about getting to a disorderly, for running out of money that they can't pay shit. I don't think that they are going to make the radical changes need to happen until basically it reaches that point.
Okay.
I really don't. I it's just going to have to explode. Okay. And then maybe it'll do something. So.
Okay. Next up, what the hell is happening in China?
Well, basically a lot of people said that basically that the stock market in China is basically a casino. And if you look at the number of times that shares change owners in China, it just totally is. I guess since they've been cracking down on gambling in Macau and other places, I guess that they decided that why don't we fucking gamble in the stock market. So all of a sudden this year, after the stock market like surging in one direction, then it was crashing like 30-40%, like in a few months, and everybody was in a fucking panic. And the central government, China's central government, trying to prop up the stock market. Then it went back up a little bit, but I just think that there's just that stock market is just rampant with like crazy speculation, and that's why that's been happening. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be any long term impact from that. There's just a lot of people playing with funny money.
So you think fundamentally this is just, it's going to be a correction in the Chinese stock market. A bunch of people lose money they thought they had, but no long-term impact, no domino effect on the rest of the world, nothing like that.
I don't see it, no. Yeah, I don't see any other impact like that, no. But it's just quite interesting to see the swings. And there's just been a lot of people like speculating and with concern about what will happen with it. I don't think it's going to create some kind of a global like problem, the fact that the Chinese stock market is like swinging around like a fucking it's just crazy, the way it's been going up and down.
So all three of these, bottom line, you think they're primarily local effects as opposed to any of these having a real impact, a real ability to have like a domino effect on the rest of the world?
I think that, here's the thing, like you mentioned before, right, the Greek debts are not held by the banks, right? They're held by the governments for the most part, right? So, look, the German government could take a $100 billion hit, whatever.
Like, right,
back to Germany.
What a lot of the commentary is like, Germany's making a really huge deal out of this, but as a percentage of European GDP, this is tiny.
Yeah,
they could decide overnight to just forgive the Greek debt entirely,
right?
And just be like, okay, we're done, forget this,
and that's it.
Wipe the clean slate, and without any significant overall effect.
Exactly. So that's why I think
they're causing more damage by doing what they're doing. I know they're trying to make a point here, but
a lot of the debt for Puerto Rico has been bought up the last few years by vulture investors, basically because the value of the debt has been going down. It used to be held a lot more by individuals, but it's held mostly by mutual funds, and it's held by vulture investors. So the risk is spread. It's diluted. I don't see that it's a systemic risk. It's more a risk to like Puerto Rico, like right now in the situation where it's at. So I don't see that. And the Chinese stock market is not a stock market that is widely held. These companies, with a few exceptions of certain specific stocks like Alibaba and that kind of stuff. For the most part, their stocks are not widely held. So that's also one that that I don't see. It's interesting to look at and something or whatever, but is it going to be something that causes systemic collapse or something? I would say no.
Well, so, good.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've hit enough on these three areas. We're going to take another break, and we're going to come back and talk about all the lovely events in election 2016, the U.S. presidential election. Back after this. Da 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 Okay, here we are again. So we are.
No, but anyway.
No.
I'm going to my Apple Music moment. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. We got a whole bunch of things for a whole bunch of people. Let's start out with Clinton. So, what are the new things with Clinton? So,
ropes.
Yes, she got some flack because she was roping off the press. She had a few events and she was basically putting the press in a little pen where they couldn't follow her around.
But hey, like I said about this before, we talked about this, right?
Uh-huh.
It's working for her, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think she ended up making a joke about it and letting some of them out later, I think. But, you know, the press, of course, has to somehow acquiesce to this, right? I mean, it's not like they can't step over the rope. I mean, it's not like this is a Secret Service cordon where no one is allowed on the other side of the rope, because there are all kinds of people on the other side of the rope shaking her hand and doing stuff in the general public. And, you know, if you had an aggressive press here, they could be like, okay, screw my official press credentials. I'm taking them off. I'm going to the other side of the rope with my iPhone and I'm going to talk to some people.
Right.
And record it. You know? But no, we've got a press that, for the most part, the press that follow around the candidates.
Well, because if you ever saw, like, the, what was the program, the newsroom, okay, you know?
Yeah.
I remember, like,
when, I've seen all but the last, like, season, so no spoilers from the last
okay,
season.
Okay, so if you watch that, I remember one of the things that they showed there during the campaign was, hey, you fuck with the people in the campaign, you wound up in the wrong bus.
You're out.
You're out.
I mean,
nothing.
That's the dynamic that exists here, is that, you know, because the candidate can say, you know, look, I'm controlling access. If you don't play ball, you don't get to talk to me. You don't get the press release.
Get nothing.
You get nothing. And of course, the counter argument is, you don't want the shit the campaign's spewing at you anyway. It's all a bunch of propaganda. A real good campaign reporter would not want to be on that bus. They would not want to be on that plane. They would follow the candidate around completely independently and talk to the people the candidate is interacting with after the candidate is gone or before they get there, or otherwise be reporting on or digging into the candidate's positions on things or things that they've said. They don't even have to be in the same state as the candidate to be a good reporter about what's going on with the campaign. You know? And that's what, if you had a truly good adversarial press corps, then your reporters would be saying, we don't want to be on your damn bus. We're going to go look into you however we want. But that's, you know, and there are a few people like that out there. But for the most part, no, you've got, you know, the people from all the networks and all the newspapers and all this kind of stuff. They want to get the official credential. They want to be on the bus. And in order to do so, they play ball and they report on what the candidate wants them to report. And that's not what the press should be doing.
I agree, but I think that conceptually, but I don't
look. You know, if we want to hear what the campaign officially wants us to say, you know, we don't need the press for that. We can go to the campaign website and read their damn press release or whatever. You know, the role of the press should not be to regurgitate Hillary Clinton said this today.
I get it, but I don't know. Look, you and I are not on the front lines with these guys trying to do that job, so I don't know. I'm sure they're trying to make it. They're making a calculated decision about it.
There you go, Yvonne. Let's both quit our jobs and let's go follow presidential candidates around, and report on the truth.
The truth.
The truth.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm good. Thank you.
We could spend the rest of the year in Iowa.
God, Jesus Christ. No, thank you.
Maybe a little New Hampshire?
That sounds a little better. Maybe a little bit cold, like, you know, near the end of the year.
Yeah, well, both Iowa and New Hampshire are cold at the end of the year, yes. But yeah. Anyway, a while back, probably 6 months ago, I tweeted something along the lines of, around this time every 4 years, I start thinking it would be really cool to live in Iowa or New Hampshire, and then, nah.
Well, okay, so that's enough about the ropes. What about, we've got other crap happening.
Yeah, well, it just, I want to say there's been more Clinton email stuff, but, you know, it's all the same crap, you know, nothing's going to change on that. Okay, and beyond Clinton, Bush had two things go on this week. Just today, today he announced his big money haul. He got $100 million. He has been raising more money than any other Republican candidate. And for that matter, he's been raising more money than Hillary Clinton. He met his goal, or his strategy is all about get so much more money than everybody else that the rest of the people can't compete. And we're just going to, you know, blow them out of the water through that process. He's not really blowing them out of the water so far on everything else. He's not even number one in the polls right now. It depends on how you count, blah, blah, blah. But he's in the top tier regardless. However, he is raking in the money. And I've said all along, follow the money if you want to see who's going to end up being the nominee. And so far, it doesn't. He is getting the lion's share of the money. You know, I've said, you know, if you start seeing the money flowing somewhere else, that's when you know Bush is really in trouble. But so far, that's not happening. So far, he's getting the money.
Right. So, but still a fragmented field. Still, who knows? I mean, It seems to me it's just so difficult, like right now with that field, because of there's just so many damn candidates, and I know he's getting the money right now, but he's just so soft. It's just, and it's so early. I mean, and he's had foot and mouth disease as well already on multiple occasions. Yeah,
I was about to mention the latest thing is the, hey, it's time for the gaffes. He was making some comments about the economy, economics, whatever, and he made a comment where the actual sentence he ended up saying was something along the lines of, Americans have to work longer hours.
Oh, you
hadn't seen this?
No. And by the way, I just noticed something as I've been talking over here, by the way, which I just freaked out all of a sudden. My phone, apparently, for whatever reason, has been like sucking all the data out of my data plan. I started getting notifications that I'm out of data.
Excellent.
My phone sucked up like 8.5 gigs, apparently, today. And I'm not doing anything.
Excellent. So anyway, back to Bush. Yes.
What the hell?
The comment... Here's a longer quote. My aspiration for the country, and I believe we can achieve it, is 4% growth as far as the eye can see, which means we have to be a lot more productive. Workforce participation has to rise from its all-time modern lows. It means that people need to work longer hours and through their productivity gain more income from their families. That's the only way we're going to get out of this rut we're in. So that's the longer quote. So this ends up being something very typical of gaffes, which is if you actually look at, well, what did he mean to say? What he's actually talking about is the fact that there are many people who are working part-time who want to be working full-time and are not able to at the moment because they can't find the jobs to be quote-unquote fully employed. He clarified his statements later, and if you read it in full context, it's fairly, it can be unclear, but that's a reasonable interpretation of what he was trying to say. However, he screwed it up, and what he said was people need to work longer hours. And so, of course, people have been attacking him, saying that, pointing to all kinds of charts about how much more people are working than they have in the past, how average, hours in the work week is up, how productivity is up, but compensation isn't up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's getting a lot of flack over that. This is how the presidential season goes, because everybody is looking for everybody else to make a mistake that they can do that 2-second soundbite and make them look really stupid and bad, or make them look mean or out of touch. And that's what's happening here. And, you may agree or disagree with his overall statements and his economic policy, and a lot of people have criticized what he actually meant as well. But you get the 2-second soundbite and boom, everybody's going to jump on top of you for it.
But he is a gaffe machine. He keeps doing these things, that's one of the things where I just feel like he's so weak.
Yeah, I mean, the other one was the Iraq stuff a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah, we're this early, and, all I see, it's the reason why, for example, it's like talking about, well, Hillary keeps the reporters away. Why? Whatever.
Because of this.
Because of this shit. I mean, and he keeps doing this kind of crap all the damn time. It's retarded.
Well, and the thing is, right now, Hillary can sort of lock herself away and, avoid some of this while all the Republicans go and make all kinds of statements that are going to be used against them later, either by each other during the primary or in the general afterwards.
You get Trump calling the rapists, which has cost them dearly, so far. And I think it's going to cost them even more.
Let's jump into Trump. Well, not literally, please, but yes, he made all these comments about Mexicans, very derogatory. A whole bunch of people are pulling out of business ventures with Trump. And he put out a statement saying, ha ha, I keep your deposit and I sell it to somebody else, and so big deal. But at the same time, that does appear to have hurt him potentially financially. However, he's now number one in the polls on the Republican side. Not if you look at all the averages, but the most recent poll was a YouGov poll.
Oh, yeah, now he's like in second or first place. Well, I mean, look, he, like we said, you wrote this in that post. You were talking about the whole gay marriage thing. I mean, these fucking Republicans, this is what they want, whack jobs. Now you wonder why the hell they're calling it the party of hate. I mean, these guys are all hate mongers and whack jobs.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to paint everybody that way, but what's certainly
apparently a significant number of them.
Well, yeah, and what's certainly happening here, I mean, look, Trump is the Democrats' most exciting thing. The Democrats love Trump. They're like, please. Please keep talking.
Oh, keep going. Oh, yeah. Go. Yeah. Beautiful.
Because what happens, and there was a reporting that the head of the GOP, Rence Priebus, called up Trump and said, please tone it down. Please tone it down.
He's like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Now, Trump denied that was how that call went, but that was what the reporting on it was. And
I'm sure that's what they said.
Yeah, because the bottom line is there's blowback from all this kind of stuff, because what's happening is Trump is making all of these outrageous statements and people are hearing them and going away with the impression that, well, this is all Republicans. This is what the Republican Party is like right now.
Well, look, think about it.
It's fed into by the fact that the rest of the Republicans haven't actually been very good about saying, Trump is full of it and we don't support him and he's a stupid idiot. Go away. They haven't.
No, they haven't. They keep, they keep basically, from my perspective, they keep, feeding him. I mean, they love it. I mean, honestly, I mean, you tell me what the hell gives you an indication that these guys don't really like it. I don't know. These are the same people that were arguing about taking down the fucking Confederate flag. These are the same fucking people that were against gay marriage.
We just had on the Confederate flag issue, we had a 13-hour debate in the South Carolina Parliament on this, with a lot of people standing up and defending the Confederate flag and saying that it needed to stay up or trying to delay it in one way or another. And of course, that ended up getting resolved. The flag in South Carolina will go down. I mean, it really is a symbolic thing, but symbolism matters here, because people hear these debates and say, are you kidding me? They're really debating about this in 2015. And then meanwhile, in the U.S. Congress, they were doing a bill on funding for like national parks and stuff. And the Democrats, first of all, the Democrats snuck in some amendments while basically nobody was on the floor by voice vote to say that federal parks couldn't display the Confederate flag in gift shops or on graves or things like that. And then a certain minority of the Republicans decided that they were going to try to put back in amendments to reverse that.
Right.
And say that it was okay after all.
Right.
And so the Democrats in Congress jumped all over this. The Republican leadership was like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this, and ended up pulling the bill to avoid it going into a debate. Because right. the Republican leadership doesn't want to have this debate. The Republican right. leadership is like, oh my God, this will hurt us so much. Let's just not talk about it. Please, can we please not talk about it at all?
But they can't get their people to shut up about this crap.
And this ties to what I was saying before. There is a core part of the Republican base that is anti-immigrant, likes the Confederate flag. There are certainly a core group of racists there too. There's the anti-gay marriage and the homophobic group. There's the anti-science group. These aren't all the same people, by the way.
Right.
And it's not to say that you pick a random Republican off the street and they might not be a wonderful person, but there are these core groups within the Republican Party that each one of them might actually be a relatively small group, each one individually, but collectively the Republican Party can't afford to have those people stay home. And so they can't, from a leadership point of view, say, you guys are full of it, you're hateful, go away. They just can't. And so they're in this little paralysis where, like, all the Republican candidates know that this stuff is going to hurt them in the general election, but they feel like they can't come out and denounce it because that would hurt them in the primaries. And of course, some of the Republican candidates, if you take them individually on each one of these issues, actually support these positions that we're saying, like Huckabee. Pretty much go right across the board of the things I was talking about. I don't know how racist he is, but he's certainly, in the anti-gay, anti-science, he's one of the top candidates here. So these are real constituencies in the Republican Party, and it's an anchor that's attached to their leg while they're being thrown into water. This is something that is poison in the general election. And the question is, can they get through this whole primary season without whoever ends up there being their nominee fatally hurt by having to pander to all these folks?
Yeah, I know. Well, but here goes. So we're talking about this part. I guess my key question is, since the leadership is trying to get them to shut up about this crap, and then you had these Supreme Court decisions that basically, for the most part, settled the debate on a couple of issues that if they went into the campaign, were going to hurt them. Okay, right. All right. Do you think that that's a net positive for the Republicans, the fact that this is like basically at this point, it's almost like, well, great, you can be all against gay marriage all you want, but guess what? sell all the land. You're done. You're out.
Well, this is a key question, because it could be like if they were truly willing to say, okay, we disagree with it, but it's a settled issue. Let's move on.
Right.
And let's talk about economics and taxes and Obamacare or whatever else. Then that might be a net positive for it, but it doesn't seem like they're going that way. Like,
yeah, because I saw, like, wasn't it Huckabee that I think said something about that if he became president, that he would like, choose to ignore,
yes,
Supreme Court or something, that they're irrelevant or some stupid shit like
so
that.
So we've got, like, you know, Bush might want, for instance, Bush might want to follow exactly that course. Settled issue, let's move on. Okay. Right. But, you know, Huckabee and Trump and Walker and Santorum and these guys aren't going to let him.
That you may be right. I mean, if you know, if I you may be right. I thought that maybe it was going to be a net positive, because I think that maybe it'll force them to shut up, but it doesn't seem like these guys are going to shut up. So, you know, I mean, bottom line, it's probably going to be a net. I mean, this still plays for the Democrats at this point.
I think it does play for the Democrats, and I think the Democrats realize it, and they're ramping up the rhetoric on these issues.
And I think it makes them, you know, it makes the Republicans just look that much more like you just mentioned. It's funny, because instead of like getting them to shut up, it's just turning them to foam at the mouth about it now.
Right. And somebody like Hillary is going to take every possible opportunity she can to point this out. And she's not going to point at whatever sort of calm, collected, trying to be, you know, not argumentative about an answer Bush is going to give. She's going to point out all the crazy things Trump is saying, and all the very strident things Huckabee is saying. And, you know, she's going to pick out the most inflammatory comments on every issue from whichever candidate is the craziest on that particular issue. And she's going to try to paint the whole field with it, because, and the reason she can is not just because, hey, that guy is saying it, but because for the most part, the other candidates aren't willing to just fundamentally call them out and say, no, you're wrong. You're being stupid on this issue.
Yeah. Well, so what's the bottom line here? What do you think?
I still stick with where we're going to end up with Bush versus Clinton, and Clinton.
You still go with Bush versus Clinton?
I still say Bush versus Clinton, and Clinton wins, because like you got all of these other folks.
I'd be an idiot to choose somebody other than Clinton. I'm just not sold yet on the whole Bush thing.
As we say, yeah, every week we talk about it. I mean, I think he's got better odds than everybody else. But it's not a slam dunk.
It's not a slam dunk. Hillary's just a slam dunk. If Hillary implodes, it'll be the most shocking implosion.
Well, and let me mention, since back on the Democrats for a second, before we move on from the election entirely, you know, people keep talking about this Bernie Sanders surge and how he's still surging and how well he's doing and blah, blah, blah. And okay, he's doing better than maybe anybody expected him to.
But he's still not going to get the
nominee. Not only is he still, Hillary is 40% ahead of him.
I know.
Okay, you know, maybe he's got 15-20%, and nobody ever thought he'd be above 5. But Hillary's got 60-something% in all these polls.
Right.
You know, and you know, okay, the best, and Sanders is doing best in Iowa and New Hampshire, and of course those are important, but even there, he's still behind by like 10%, you know? And so what I've always said is, look, what you have to watch is, you know, is Hillary showing fundamental weakness? And people are arguing that the fact that Sanders is doing as well as he has is showing some kind of weakness. But she has to fall below 50% in these polls. If she falls to you know, 45 or 40%, if she's below 50 and dropping, then she's in trouble, but she's not in trouble from Bernie Sanders. That's when you get other people jumping in the race who aren't there at all right now. Sanders is not going to get the nomination. I'm sorry to all my progressive liberal friends who like Bernie Sanders and his policies. Yeah, frankly, I like some of what he has to say, too.
And more than anything,
to be honest, one of the things I like about him is he's one of those candidates who, because he knows he doesn't have a freaking shot in the world, is being honest. He's saying, you know what he's saying is exactly what he means. He's not focus grouping it and trying to see what will get him the most votes. He's saying what he believes. And I always find that refreshing in a politician. And I've said before, in certain circumstances, I would vote for somebody who I disagree with, who I feel is honest about it, over somebody I agree with, who I feel is a liar. You know? Sanders' momentum, whatever, he's got 15% against Hillary's 65. You know, I know you want to make a story about how, you know, Hillary is vulnerable in this chaos and who knows what'll happen, but, you know, and you know, I don't discount the possibility that Hillary could stumble and fall before we get to the nomination, but we don't see it yet. That's not what's going on yet. But yeah, she is rusty in a whole bunch of ways. I mean, there was an interview with her on CNN or whatever, and she did not come across particularly positively on it, even though it was an incredibly softball interview, because she's still got that sort of, you know, people keep contrasting her with her husband, where her husband, you know, is very friendly and approachable and makes everybody want to like him, even if you disagree with him. Hillary comes off as defensive almost every time she's in an interview, and it doesn't wear well on her. So, like, she may be completely and 100% competent, and you may agree with her policies, but when you get her in a room with people, she doesn't inspire, you know, wonderful, warm, fuzzy feelings or anything like that. And you don't necessarily need that of a candidate, but it's certainly helpful. And it's something that she has to sort of fight against, is the sort of notion that she comes into these things and people come out thinking, what's she hiding? You know, as opposed to, oh, I like that person. I would vote for them. She has trouble with that step. Anyway, I still think Bush. And by the way, the Real Clear Politics Republican nomination poll averages still have Bush ahead, and actually have Trump in seventh place. But there have been
averages, obviously, right? Yeah,
The average is better, and there are a couple other places that do more sophisticated polling averages than Real Clear Politics. But Real Clear Politics is nice and easy to understand. It's like the last four major polls, or something along those lines. Very similar to how I do the last five polls. And so they still have, yeah, their top five right now are Bush, Walker, Carson, Rubio, Huckabee, followed by Paul, Trump, Cruz, Perry, and Christie. And that would round out like the top 10 that would get into the debates. After that, you've got Santorum, Fiorina, Kasich, Jindal, and Graham.
Okay.
And there was that some other guy just announced that I'd never even heard of, some governor somewhere. It's like, really? You need more? Anyway.
Yeah, we should get more. I mean, I really want more. We probably will get more. It's the funniest thing.
There will be.
There will be?
I'm sure there will be. Anyway, enough about 2016. We went on way too long. We'll be back after this with something. I don't know.
Whatever.
Yeah, back.
Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
You You know, of all the things that we need for this show, you know what we actually need most?
A producer?
A producer, but not just a producer who could, you know, because this is the after the fact editing the show and stuff that I do that, we could probably use a real editor as opposed to somebody who just strings the pieces together. But no, I'm thinking about somebody who actually sits there next to one of us with the timer, because I've used the timer.
It just tells us to shut up.
It just tells us to shut up. Tells us your 10 minutes is up. You are done. We're cutting your microphone off. We're going on to the next
segment. McLaughlin. Pat Buchanan!
Exactly. Someone to keep us from spending half an hour talking about one subject like we just did.
Yes. Jesus. Okay. I don't know how the hell we spent that long. Anyway. All right.
The New York Stock Exchange went down because of a computer problem. United went down. The airline went down because of a computer problem.
Yep.
And we've also had increasing revelations about just how bad this hack of the federal government's Office of Personnel Management hack was. They're now up to, what is it, 17 million people affected or something like that? By this, where personnel records, but also it's been mentioned from the beginning, but the extent is just keeps getting wider. The forms that people fill out related to investigations for security clearances. So all this is out there, and I think rather than talk about these individually, the common element on all of these is how absolutely 100% ingrained our lives are at this point with, you know, these various technological solutions to things that if you get a problem, it can affect a lot of people really fast.
No, I mean, it very quickly. And I mean, and you know, think about it. It's just, it's the cascading effect of like, how dependent we become on the technology, and how there are certain like components that are fragile of it that, I mean, all of a sudden could cause such a large ripple effect, like an entire airline basically not working because apparently what I understood was some kind of like a hardware networking misconfiguration somewhere.
Well, and the New York Stock Exchange was also, they were trying to do a software upgrade and it went wrong.
And it went wrong. Yeah. It just went wrong. And, you know, we had the NYSE, like, basically, like, paralyzed for about 4 hours. I mean, you know, both on the same day.
And the OPM was related to, you know, they're using outdated technology without modern security on all kinds of systems. And so it was fairly easily hacked. And we've talked before about how nobody, including the feds, is paying proper attention to security of their systems. And so you get these things. But, you know, the vulnerabilities that are pointed out by these, whenever you have like, we screwed up a software upgrade and a whole critical system went down and shut down a section of the economy for a day. Brings up again, well, if it's so easy to screw these up accidentally, what could you do if you were actively trying to do this?
That's a great question. I don't know. I personally do believe it's a lot easier to fuck up something like you doing maintenance, like you directly, than somebody outside intentionally trying to do it.
That is true.
I do totally believe that.
The thing is, I mean, just like we had the Snowden leak, the danger wasn't an outsider in that case. It was an insider.
It was the insider. Yeah.
You know, so if you had somebody on the New York Stock Exchange staff who wanted to create an outage, could probably do it very easily.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have no doubt.
Same with United, same with these other things. You know, internal security, like, is much harder. Like, I mean, not that we've done a good job with external security, as the OPM hack shows. And that was probably, a spear phishing attack, a social engineering of some sort that got people in from the beginning. I don't know that. That's speculation. But, you know, we're not doing a good job with external security. Internal security is a lot harder because fundamentally you trust your own employees to a certain degree. Right. And you expect that they will abide by the policies that you set. Right. And so you don't necessarily have systematic protections against everything. You just have, you know, policies against it. You're not supposed to do this. If you do this, we'll fire you or whatever. But if somebody doesn't care about being fired, then all bets are off. You know, all kinds of damage could be done. You know, and so I think that, you know, we are going to find out over the next few years to few decades just how vulnerable we are on all kinds of things like this. Because, you know, fundamentally, if a vulnerability exists, somebody is going to exploit it at some point. And so we're gonna see like more and more of these things over time. And you can say we've been lucky so far. I mean, we, you know, the Sony hack was very embarrassing to Sony, but didn't kill anybody. You know, right. the stock exchange was down for a day, less than a day.
But it didn't even stop stock trading, because right now trading is so
on other exchanges.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep.
And you know, and I don't know. All the damage is yet to be seen from this OPM leak. But, you know, we've got all of these things that have been fairly minor so far. At some point, we're going to get one that causes really significant damage on a large scale. I'm not wishing it, but I think it's inevitable.
It probably is. I mean, it probably is. But it goes back to, you know, what we were mentioning earlier. I still don't understand why people don't take these don't take this stuff more seriously. I don't get it. I just don't. It's just everybody seems to be just being cavalier about it.
Well, the bottom line is it's expensive to take seriously. It's expensive to take security seriously. It's expensive to take, you know, really careful release management seriously. This costs lots of money to do it. The more careful you are about it, the more money is involved, the more manpower is involved, the more overhead you have that that slows down your agility. So like if you're really, really, really super careful about something, guess what? That also means you're slow. And we're in a culture that pushes you know, being able to react really quickly, to innovate quickly, to change things quickly. And, you know, guess what? The faster you go, the more error prone it is.
That's right. That's right. And the more interconnected everything is, the more likely it is for something to happen.
And for it to be able to cascade as well.
Exactly. Because think about, for example, one of the things they're talking about is, you know, how we have, I was hearing about all these concerns when Google bought Nest, right, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, now we got, like, stuff like, look, you're putting, like, your thermostat at home connected. You get your TVs are networked. Even your door locks in places are networked. Security cameras in your house. Yep. I mean, it's just everything more and more is becoming connected. So when something happens, you know, when everything's connected, I mean, you know, it's just a lot easier to cascade. When we had a little thermostat that was just a standalone little thing over there that wasn't connected to anything, you know, everything could go kaboom, and it didn't stop anything from working, you know?
Well, I mean, fundamentally, I mean, every once in a while we have, you know, a major blackout in one part of the country or another.
Sure.
And usually they don't last all that long. But if you ever think about it, and, you know, if you even imagine, like, try to imagine yourself saying, okay, this weekend, this next coming weekend, I'm gonna turn off the electricity to my house, and I'm not gonna use any electronic devices of any sort for the entire weekend. For most people, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, because it completely cuts you off from the world. You don't know what the hell you're doing. Like you said, it's, you know, it's probably, you've probably got technology controlling your ovens and your refrigerator and, you know, all of this stuff. Not to mention just your computer and your phone and all that kind of stuff. You know, we live in a world that is incredibly technology driven, and there's a lot of it at this point is also network driven. You know, forget about turning off electricity, turn off the internet. You know,
right.
Imagine going without connectivity to the internet for, you know, 48 hours and how that makes you feel. Now, of course, there are significant parts of the world that still aren't connected a lot of the time. There are many people who don't have internet at home, you know, even in the United States, but certainly worldwide. So to some extent, this is a first world problem, but you look at this and you realize that if something major went wrong with that stuff, it has a massive amount of room for disruption. And even with these relatively minor things that we're talking about that can cut off, you know, certain things for a limited number of hours, this mass, you know, how much money did United lose by having, not being able to run their airline for half a day?
Oh gosh. I mean, estimated in the tens of millions of dollars.
Right. And that was one relatively minor thing at one company. You know, if somebody was seriously doing across the board attack, they could cause all kinds of damage. And I'm not even getting into like the conspiracy theory folks that talk about electromagnetic pulses from a single nuke, hundreds of miles over the United States that could knock out the electric grid for the whole country and stuff like that. Those technologies actually do exist and those things are possible. But we don't even have to go to that kind of craziness. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. And even take out the malicious people. I think we've seen time and time again now, just from accidental stuff, like the stuff we're talking about this week in the NYSE and United, you know, we're highly dependent on highly complex systems that will break down on a regular basis because of human error or software glitches, which are in turn actually human error. So we're just going to see more and more of this, and it's just going to be a regular part of life. And as long as people aren't taking security seriously, we're going to keep seeing these breaches over and over and over again where somebody or other loses all their data and it either gets leaked to, you know, some, you know, like they say China is probably behind the OPM stuff or some private group or whatever. This kind of stuff is going to be just all the time. And it's kind of scary, but you know, hey, it's the new normal. Let's get used to it.
Right.
Okay. Long enough for that segment. We'll be back. We'll do a lightning round. I hesitate to say we'll be fast because we never are. We'll be back after this.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, we're back. Time for an exciting lightning round. You ready for this, Yvonne?
Oh, boy. Hold on.
We have separate lists now. We're not trying to go off one list.
Hang on, because I got to pull up my list.
Yvonne's all confused, not prepared.
Okay, I got it now.
Okay, I will start. Screw that one. Iran. Iran is going on. We're past all the deadlines, but we're still negotiating. Kerry gave a little speech today saying that we're close, but we've still got some significant issues. This will not go on indefinitely. However. We realize it would be stupid to stop simply because the clock turned midnight. I think that's probably right. You know, you've got other leaks from the Obama administration saying that the assessment is it's less than a 50-50 chance that we get a deal right now. Some of the statements that were made lead me to think that right now Obama's actually starting to lose patience with this, and Kerry's saying, give me a couple more days, that kind of thing. I don't know that. I'm reading between the lines. I could be completely wrong. But I think this is one of those things where it does behoove them to, you know, keep going until it's absolutely clear it's pointless not to, because the potential benefit on all sides from to us, to Iran, to everybody else are positive if this deal gets made. With, of course, the one notable group who thinks that is what I just said is completely false is, of course, Israel, who thinks that this would be a disaster of catastrophic proportions if any sort of deal was made with Iran. And actually, the Saudis probably agree with them to some degree. But my gut feel is they're wrong, and that in the end, a deal to sort of start bringing Iran back into the friendly family of nations is a net positive. I don't know. Any thoughts there?
I think the one thing that I was like seeing is that, look, it seems like the hardliners in Iran want a deal. It's just kind of weird the way they want the deal, I guess, because they kind of like, one of the things I was reading is that they want a deal, but yet at the same time, they don't want to be closer to the West. Mm. So it seems. So it's kind of weird.
Well,
but anyway.
Yeah, they're poison pills on all that kind of stuff. Being closer to the West also potentially, their isolation has actually increased the power of the ruling class.
Right.
And so if they're less isolated, then that potentially brings up, it might be good for the country of Iran overall, but it's unclear that it's good for the leadership of Iran.
Exactly.
Anyway, exactly. Your topic, what's up?
Let's see. Your impersonation of me sucks. Can I be honest? It was not very good.
Well, you know, I wasn't actually trying. I just realized after the fact that the sentence I just said kind of sounded like I was imitating you, so I made a joke about it. But it wasn't me intentionally trying to do an impression. I'm not.
You're not very good at it, and really, you should stick with your day job.
Stick with my day job. Okay, got it.
Yep.
Okay, my turn. I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but I just wanted to say it again. As we're recording this, we are 4 days away from the closest encounter with Pluto for the New Horizons probe. So for those of you, and probably less by the time I get this out to everybody. So if you are at all interested in space and space things, you know, pay attention. There's cool stuff happening right now. Okay, that's all I got on that.
Okay. All right. What do we got? Sam, you're nuts on this whole discrimination thing, man. You keep have this pipe dream about, you know, oh yeah, you know, we'll just no laws, anybody can discriminate, and then the people will be in trouble, blah blah blah. It's like, get it, but you'd be totally right. You live in fucking like Washington, liberal Washington. You don't see, you know, if you're living in fucking Louisiana or like Alabama or something, you may not feel that way. You do need the law to protect you.
And I believe on last week's show, and you're referring to my rant
you did
there,
say that afterwards.
I did say that, and I said that, you know, look, I believe this in general, the right way to do is, you know, let bigots be bigots and let them suffer the consequences of that. However, that only works in places where there actually are consequences.
Right.
If they're in places where that view is in the majority,
right,
then in fact, the whole, you know, I said, you know, go to, if they won't bake you a cake, go to the guy over across the street that will bake you a cake. But in certain areas, the guy across the street, even if he wants to bake you a cake, is afraid to, because, you know, then he'll be boycotted because he's being friendly.
And,
you know, so I recognize that. And I think in last week's show, I made a lot of caveats about that and said that,
yes,
know,
you did.
This is something
I'm just trying to reinforce to you that your thinking is insane.
Yeah, well, I think
I know that you said, you know, gave the caveats later. I just, you know, yeah, it's just
and I think those are important, that if you are in a, I think that is the preferred method, is sort of let the market do its work here. Let the market, not just the financial market, but the market of public opinion do its work here. But that does rely on you having a certain critical mass of people, quote unquote, already having the right opinion. If you don't have that, then public opinion actually works in the opposite direction, which can be very negative. And so, you know, in those cases, maybe you do need some sort of intervention to sort of push people in the right direction, let's say. And I'm very reluctant to do that, but I recognize in some cases it might be necessary.
Okay. All right. You next.
Next up, I'm going to jump forward a little bit. I saw a movie.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Guess which one I saw? I alluded to it last week. And I know you listened.
Fuck, I can't remember.
I watched Star Wars, the original 1970s Star Wars. Because I figure, you look, my son is 5. There's a new one of these movies coming out. It's time to introduce Star Wars and go through the cycle. So we watched the original Star Wars. He kind of pretended not to be interested in it, but he was clearly paying attention for most of it. At the end, he was ready for the next one. So it went well. And of course, I like Star Wars. I enjoy the movie. I recommend everybody see it. We did watch the special editions, and there's a lot of controversy over some of the stuff that George Lucas did. For the most part, I don't think that's really a big deal. I think it's fine with the special stuff added for the most part. There are a couple little bits where I think he went too far. Of course, Han shot first. There are a couple of places where there's like just comedic stuff happening in the background that wasn't there in the original that actually detracts to what's going on in the foreground. And it's like, really? Come on. Did you have to do that? But it's a good movie. It's a good movie series. We are going to be watching the rest of them. I've got this thing. I want to go through all the Star Wars stuff in chronological order, but the rest of the family does not want to see the next thing, which, by the way, is not The Empire Strikes Back. The next Star Wars thing in chronological order after the original Star Wars is the Star Wars Holiday Special. There was a Star Wars Holiday Special around Thanksgiving of 1978. It only aired once. George Lucas has done his very best to destroy all evidence that it ever existed because it is horrible. It is horrible.
How are you going to get a copy of it?
Oh, it's widely available on the internet. Like, you can find it. You can even find it on YouTube, most of it, with a couple little bits censored out. It's 2 hours long. It's got Jefferson Airplane doing musical number. It's got B. Arthur. It's got children Wookiees named Itchy and Lumpy. From all reports, the main cast of Star Wars appears in it in little cameos, and they do a musical number at the end where they sing the Star Wars theme, but with words. From all reports, most of them were quite under the influence when they recorded this as well. Anyway.
The special is notorious for its extremely negative reception. This is what I'm noticing on the...
on the Wikipedia page, yes.
Yes. I am not convinced. Nathan Rabin of the AV Club wrote, "I'm not convinced the special wasn't ultimately written and directed by a sentient bag of cocaine." That's pretty brutal there.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, whether or not my family watches it, I am going to watch the whole damn holiday special. I've now got a copy of it on my computer. I'm ready to go. I'm going to watch it. Anyway, we got time for like maybe two more of these. Your turn.
Fuck. Do I have anything else to talk about? Looking at my list.
If you don't, I'll take two more slots.
Take two more slots. I'm out.
Okay. I did want to mention the there's this organization called the Hacking Team. It is a company based out of Italy that's basically sells spyware to police organizations, governments, etc. And it's basically malware that they will put on to intercept things. And they're known for selling this. Not only have they sold to, you know, American police organizations and Western European police organizations, stuff like that, but they will basically sell to any brutal dictator anywhere in the world. And so they've been criticized heavily for selling their software to various repressive regimes who use it to persecute dissidents in various ways.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. So, and you know, they make lots of money over this. But what happened this week is that someone hacked them and put online 400 gigabytes of internal documents from this company.
There you go. Well,
including internal emails, presentations, even source code to some of their software. And much of this has been revealed as highly embarrassing and basically validates everything that everybody was saying to them about repressive governments they're selling to, the fact they have no moral compulsion about doing so, the fact that they are in fact potentially selling to some places that were actually illegal for them to sell to. All this kind of stuff. And they've, of course, also had to defend themselves by the fact of, you know, how did you get hacked by this in the first place? Well, it turns out that at least one, this may or may not have been the entry vector, but according to some of the documents that were released, at least one of their critical security engineers, quote unquote engineers, security engineers, guess what? Had their passwords were all variants of the word password.
Oh, God.
And you know, and in addition, this engineer, in addition to the text file on his on his own computer that they hacked into first, there was a text file with passwords unencrypted to all kinds of other systems that let them get other places, as well as, by the way, a text file of URLs to his favorite porn.
Well, so that part's very interesting.
You know, so anyway, I think this company is kind of getting what they deserve, but it's interesting to watch it play out.
Especially if they hired such a moron as like running security. What a
I should step back. I don't know for sure that his responsibility was actually security. He may have just been an engineer, not a security engineer. I exceeded my actual knowledge. I had that impression in my head, but it may not be true. But anyway, and he may or may not have been the vector that they used to get in. But regardless. Is stupid, and they're all stupid, and they're definitely immoral in any case. And finally, I'll do this one last thing before closing.
Oh, well, yes, I got one other comment. I found another review on the George Lucas special.
Yes.
Apparently, a quote from George Lucas himself disliked the special and reportedly said, "If I had the time and a sledgehammer, I would track down every copy of the show and smash it."
Yes.
Unquote.
Yes. I've watched a few minutes of it here and there, and I think maybe I think honestly
I did watch a few minutes of this thing. I
will go further, and I have a vague memory. I think I watched this thing live when it aired in 1978.
I may have too.
I mean, I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Star Wars was a really big, huge thing.
Yes.
This was the first bit of Star Wars anybody could get after the first movie.
We had CBS. So, yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, I may have watched this thing. Of course, apparently, I guess I wasn't that impressed with it.
Well, nobody was.
Apparently, nobody was.
It's one of these things where everybody says, wait, wasn't there this thing about
Wookiees? The Star Wars Holiday Special was critically panned both by Star Wars fans and the general public. David Hoff is the author of What Were They Thinking? 100 Dumbest Events in Television History, ranked the Holiday Special at number one, calling it the worst 2 hours of television ever. It's a 70s train wreck combining both the worst of Star Wars with the utter worst of variety television.
And like I said earlier, if you want to take a peek at this, just search YouTube for Star Wars Holiday Special. You will find clips of it. And I believe this may come and go because they probably get takedown notices about it. But when I looked the other day, there was the entire 2-hour special was also on there, including commercials, including commercials. So you can watch the nice 1970s commercials. With the only thing that I noticed was they'd zeroed the sound out when the theme song at the very beginning played, because it would trigger, you know, copyright notices that would get them taken down sooner. So at least I presume that's why they did it.
Well, here's another awesome clip talking about this. So apparently in 2006, Harrison Ford was on Late Night with Conan O'Brien promoting a movie, which was not a very good movie. It's Firewall. Uh-huh. Not a very good movie. If any of you haven't watched it, you know, it's about internet. It's about security and all the stuff that we've been talking about. One of the subjects. And so he goes and says, you know, he asked him about the special, and Ford said, you know, Harrison Ford's like saying, you know, nothing. And he said, I have no memory of whatsoever of it. Therefore, it doesn't exist. O'Brien then asked Ford what he would think if it played a clip of the special on the show. Ford jokingly grabbed him, and then he said he'd never seen it. Maybe it'll be nice. Ford suffered through the crypt, which featured a scene showing Ford as Han Solo telling Chewbacca and his wife that they are like family to him, and then muttered a gruff, sarcastic thank you. That was, you know. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, my last closing comment is the one I was going to put in the introduction. You know, I've been updating you guys all on the saga of my computer problems over the last few weeks. So my internal hard drive had died.
Then your external one died.
I flipped over, so I was running off an external drive. I thought it was okay for a little while, and then it got slower and slower. And I was like, oh, God, this is unusable. Then that drive died entirely. So I ended up restoring to another external hard drive that I was going to use as a new clone. And of course, that took like 2 days to do the restore. I am running on that right now. And I will say, it's still an external drive, but it's a brand new external drive. And my God, everything is faster. Very noticeably faster. To give you an example of how bad things were before, if I opened Skype like I do before I have these calls with Yvonne to record the show, it was taking Skype approximately half an hour to open to get to the point where you could actually do anything with it. It is now, when I open Skype, taking about a minute, which is still kind of slow, you know, compared to like what you would hope for in a modern computer, but it's a hell of a lot faster than 30 minutes.
That's a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, like I can wait a minute. I'd rather not. I'd rather be like instantaneous, but I can wait a minute if I have to, right? So everything is working much snappier. It's much nicer. Everything is working really nicely, except I will say one thing. When I restored, because I restored from a Time Machine backup instead of flipping over to a clone drive this time, Apple's mail program had to re-import all my mail. Like, all my mail was there, but it didn't have it actively, right?
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you that process has now been going on almost 3 days.
Yeah, it'll take a while longer.
Well, here's the thing. Its initial estimate was 10 hours. And at the end of those 10 hours, it said time remaining less than a minute. Okay. It was probably 12 hours. I let it go overnight. When I woke up, it was at time remaining less than a minute. It has said time remaining less than a minute now for approximately 48 hours. Well, actually, a little bit less than 48 hours. I'm still going to leave it a little while longer yet. I'm not ready to hit the cancel button and try again from scratch. And I'll tell you why, because it's got right up on the screen right now the count of the number of messages it imported. It says it's done importing them, but I know after it imports it, it has to update all kinds of indexes and things like that.
Correct.
2.5 million email addresses in my email archive.
Are you 2.5? What?
2.5 million emails in my email archive.
Wow.
And so I'm going to let it go a little.
Wait a minute. 2.2. okay, let me be yes. clear about this. You're telling me that your inbox.
No, not my inbox. My full email archive, my inbox, my outbox, all my folders I've saved. This is all my
2.5 million emails.
This is basically every email I have sent or received since 1993.
I see.
No, 93? Is that right? Okay. Since we graduated from college.
Wow.
Now, I will add... Although I eventually
stopped... I don't have anywhere remotely nearly that many messages.
Eventually, I stopped doing this. But for the first 10 years of that time period, at least, I also kept every spam message. I did not delete anything. I have subsequently... I now delete my spam. I've deleted my spam for at least a decade now. But I didn't used to, and that's still included in here.
Well.
And there are also several places where I have multiple copies of things because of various historical accidents over time where I have multiple copies. So like theoretically, I could probably it is probably a lot less than 2.5 million that are quote unquote real. But of course, it would take a major human effort to like clean that out. So that'll never happen. So
well, I have email dating back on my computer, not to 93. I have it back to like 99. Okay. And the reason for that is because I changed mail clients and the mail client I was using for a while is no way to, the whole formatting was different. So yeah, I couldn't really export the messages. But I that total of like my two in if I take that inbox and the other one is only about 100,000 emails. I mean, you have like 2.5 million.
Yeah, 2,522,688 to be precise.
I mean, fuck, that's a lot of email.
Anyway, so anyway. I'm hoping that this actually. Eventually finishes importing. I'll give it until I absolutely positively need to get it my mail on this platform. I am
pretty sure that it's taken that long because
it's actually doing something.
Because a normal human being would not have 2.5 million messages.
Yes, and it's right now it's mail is taking up 9% of my memory and not very much of my CPU. So I don't know what exactly it's doing, but it hasn't crashed. It hasn't given an error.
Right. So just let it go.
So just let it go. Because if I hit cancel and start over, I'm probably just starting over.
Exactly. It's just maybe that because, you know, probably whoever programmed it thought, oh, yeah, this little part will take a minute. You know, most messages anybody's got, then it hit your outlier of the outlier of the outlier inbox.
It's indexing all my spam from the 90s.
Genius. Oh, that'll be very helpful at some point, I'm sure.
Exactly.
We're going to make a museum exhibit out of it. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
We're going to put it together with a Confederate flag. I'm going to put your spam from the 90s.
There you go. We are so done here.
Yes, we're done. We're out.
For anybody who actually made it to the end of the show, thank you. We appreciate it. As usual, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Facebook, Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Go there, leave comments, share our show, tell your friends about us. And especially if you're a new listener, I have been noticing in the stats the last couple weeks, we've been getting some new listeners. And so we'd love to hear from you if you're a new listener.
Yes, absolutely. We would love to hear from you.
So drop us a line. And other than that, hey, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.